Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Scarlet Leadership Institute monthly Lunch and Learn conference call. Before we get started, just a couple of housekeeping items. If you'd like a copy of today's slides, please send me an email at tom@scarletleadership.com. If you have questions during the call, hit *7, or if you're online, you can enter your question in the box and hit send. So, without further ado, I'll turn it over to Joe Scarlett.
Hello, everybody, and thanks for joining us again for one of our conference calls. I have a couple of things I'd like to say before we get started. First, this morning we sent out an email announcing that the Scarlett Leadership Institute will continue in operations. Earlier this year, we announced that we're going to be winding things down at the end of this year, which was the original plan, but we've had such a hue and cry from the folks who have been in our classes and those who are anticipating our classes that we've decided to reopen and go forward. Mary is going to be running things on a little bit larger scale basis than she has before. We'll be having the Signature Executive Program. We'll be restarting. We'll be doing the Emerging Leaders Program. We're doing customized work for various companies. We have a series of one-day educational classes. As a matter of fact, there's one going on here today, a class on public speaking. So we have a lot to offer, as well as these monthly conference calls, obviously. So that's announcement number one. Announcement number two is that our next conference call, put this down in your calendar now, Thursday, November 7th. We have two potential speakers and topics, and we're in the process of confirming right now. So I don't have an announcement to make, but I do have a request. When you think about the calls that you've listened to and the ones you might anticipate, give us your feedback, either by phone or email, however you want. Tell us what topics you would like us to cover or what topics you may want us to repeat to cover. We've done about almost 20 of these calls now, and we're getting to the point where we're trying to figure out what the next topic should be, so your input would be most helpful to us. Today's topic is negotiations, and we have with us Susan Williams. And you might make another little note to yourself that if you like today's program, we will be putting on a one-day negotiations class on November 20th, But the topic's negotiations, and this is a topic that you really probably don't even think about, but you're in negotiations much of the day, every day, negotiations in your business dealings. Negotiations can impact your personal relationships, and we probably don't think about it, but you negotiate with your spouse on a regular basis, too. So this is a very important topic. Susan Williams has been associated with us for a long, long time. As a matter of fact, she's a speaker, a teacher, a professor, a friend, and she was part of the founding team for the Scarlett Leadership Institute 7 years ago, she and Mary and myself. When we have our graduations for the executive program, I can tell you without any reservation, the most talked about class that they've had during that 18-day program is almost always the negotiating class. So this is a very, very important topic and one that can make a lot of difference in your ability to get things done at work and at home. So a reminder today, if you have questions, *7, if you have questions, or send them in online, and we'd be happy to field the questions during the program, so don't be shy about doing that. Well, with that, I'd like to turn it over to our hostess, Mary Fink. Mary?
Thanks, Joe, and welcome, Susan. We're glad that you're here. It's one of my favorite topics.
I know.
Love to talk about it, love to teach it, love to teach it with you. And I usually start these calls with, why is this topic important? Why does it matter? So what? Negotiation. So what?
Well, I like to joke and say you make more money per minute negotiating than any other business activity, and it's certainly one of the reasons that it's important. Another reason that it's really important is that that's what recruiters want now. They are looking for people who can resolve conflict and negotiate on behalf of themselves and on behalf of the company. Research tells us, and this is pretty new research, 15 years ago, negotiation wasn't even in the top anything. Now it's number 4 of what recruiters are looking for executives and managers today. You want to know what the other 3 are, of course. Well, number 1 is, can you work on a team? Can you play in the sandbox with other people? That's really important. Mm-hmm. Number 2, do you know and understand the numbers of your business? Number 3, can you communicate both orally and in written form? And number 4, can you resolve conflict and negotiate on behalf of your employer? wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have a whole workplace full of folks who could do those four things?
Right.
It'd be terrific, wouldn't
right.
it?
So I have a question for you. Let's say I'm interviewing for a job, and the interviewer says, so can you negotiate? Of course I'm going to say yes.
Well, yeah.
But how's he going to know that?
Well, I'll tell you a story. There's a wonderful friend of mine who said, I was being hired for a sales position, and they offered me a figure. They offered me a salary figure, and I didn't try to negotiate it, and they withdrew the offer. Because you didn't try to negotiate.
So it was sort of a test.
It was a test. And so I would say that in business, things are negotiable, and one needs to do the things necessary to negotiate on your own behalf.
Right. And I know from our conversations in the past, everything is negotiable.
Everything
not just
is.
In business.
Yes.
So, excellent. So talk to us about the model that you propose and what's significant about that. I know you've been teaching this model for a long time.
A long time. The model that I ascribe to and that I love very much is a model that is interest-based. This is not what they teach you at the airport hotels for $75, how to trick your opponent, how to take the last dollar. It is instead a principled way of doing business. You want to come to an agreement that your partner can live with, because if you make a deal that's too good to be true, it is, and it won't last. And then we get attorneys involved, and while I love attorneys, I think they cost a lot of money. And so making sure that you do something that is principled and that meets the interests of both parties,
mm-hmm.
that's the method. And it's not my method. It's the Harvard method on negotiation, taught in the Harvard Law School. So it comes with some pretty good cachet in the workplace as well.
I guess so. Did you have a comment before?
Well, as we were getting to start, I was thinking back to when we started the Scarlet Leadership Institute, and as we interviewed 35 CEOs to determine what we should do in developing our leadership programs, one of the most important topics for them was exactly that, conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. I've got to have people working for me in leadership roles that are not afraid to address the tough issues, not afraid to address the tough performance issues particularly, and be able to get in and deal with what's important. And one of the big complaints they had is some of my up-and-comers seem to be reluctant to get in and resolve conflict. They tend to want to just say, well, it'll get better tomorrow, as opposed to really attacking it. That's why this subject is so terribly important.
It is, and the notion that under the umbrella of negotiation is this difficult conversation that Joe's talking about. And the method that I teach is that's a negotiation. That difficult conversation is, by golly, a negotiation.
Absolutely it is. So I think there's a slide up now that talks a little bit about how the model differs from others, and you talked a little bit about its principle-based,
mm-hmm.
But we also talk about, and I know you are specific not to say win-win,
yes.
but mutual gain.
Mutual gain. Both parties.
Distinguish those for
yes.
me.
Win-win kind of says you get everything you want and I get everything I want. And that
nothing
really,
wrong with that.
And, well, it doesn't really happen in real world. And so when we think about mutual gain, we're looking at finding out what both parties really care about and disclosing some information. Because, and folks say to me all the time, well, I'm not sure I want to disclose any information in a negotiation. And I say, well, if you don't, how in the world are people going to know what you want?
Yeah, what's important
yeah.
to you.
Now, you don't have to come in and sort of list out your priorities. You need to dance those out, as I say. But honestly, sharing with people what you care about is a great way to get it.
No question. So let's talk a little bit about the model then, because there are some very specific steps that you take in a specific
mm-hmm.
order.
Yes.
And talk to us a little bit about that organized plan process.
There's one thing that's left off this slide, and I would put it at the first, and that is build the relationship first. This is a relationship-based kind of an approach. It says, if I know who you are as a person on the planet, I don't objectify you as, oh, you're the evil Scarlet Leadership Institute. Mm-hmm. Instead, oh, that's Mary. And I know a little bit about Mary, a little bit about who she is, a little bit about what she loves to do, about where she is in her business cycle. If I know those things, then that helps me meet Mary's needs, find out Mary's interests differently. So the first part of any negotiation is relationship building, if you can do it. Now, there are some people who come in and say, no, we're just going to get right to the bottom line. This is all about the money. And I would say that's not a good kind of an environment to make an interest-based agreement.
Because you leave a lot of things on the table.
You leave value on the table all over the place. Mm-hmm. Research tells us that executives generally leave about 25% of the value of a deal on the table.
Wow.
25%. Wow. Isn't that huge?
So would you say, I'd say that's worth building the relationship for.
I'd say it is. And it's also because it's not a zero-sum game.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking for how do we build a bigger agreement together.
Exactly.
Okay, so back to the model. This is just sort of Cliff Notes to Plato here. It's saying discover what people's interests are first, what they really care about. And research tells us that we have to dance back and forth. We have to, it's sort of, I'll show you mine if you show me yours, and we'll go back and forth and disclose some of those things. Because it's only an agreement that you're going to say yes to.
Mm-hmm.
So disclosing interests is a really good way to begin to see mutuality in a deal. The second step is once you've got those interests clarified, you want to look at, well, what are some options that we could come up with to get our interests met? And I tell the story of the helicopters over icy lines that happened because people suspended agreement. They just used helicopters to fly over icy poles and lines, but they would never have thought of that without coming up with creative options. And so finding out what those options are to get your interests met is the second step. If I divide things up into a third, a third, a third in a negotiation, which I like to do, I would say the first third is exploring interest. The second third is coming up with options. And you have to be really careful when you're coming up with ideas. If somebody comes up with the stupidest idea you've ever heard, you say that's an option and you write it down. Because you never know what's going to come out of those ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So generating options without deciding is really important. The second third then would be options. Standards are the facts and figures of negotiation that come from research.
The homework.
It's doing your homework. And one of the things we do in our classes here at the Scarlet Leadership Institute is give you a whale of a lot of material to take back and say, all right, how do I prepare correctly for a negotiation? In fact, several of my customers, Tractor Supply among them, has put those preparation materials into play. They have them on their intranet. And so preparing, doing the facts and figures, understanding the value of the agreement before you go in, you don't leave value on the table if you do that. So you're ready to decide using facts and figures. The concept of BATNA is one that is particularly important. It stands for Best Alternative to a Negotiated Agreement. And this is done in your preparation. It's your plan B. It's what you would do if this deal blew up in your face. And most executives do not want to do this. They do not want to plan for a plan B. They're so confident in their approach. They're sure this deal is mm-hmm. going to work out that oftentimes they don't have a plan B, and so they end up agreeing to something they shouldn't.
And don't you think part of that, too, is I don't want to focus too much on it not happening, or
yes.
I don't want to focus too much on a bad outcome.
That's right.
Because I might bring it about.
Yes. Yes, and we're so optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, we need some contingency plan.
Mm-hmm.
What will happen here?
Mm-hmm.
And I have a great story about a friend of mine who was getting ready to interview for a position, and she had done her research, and I met with her and I said, So what are you going to do if this negotiation falls through? She's going to work for an advertising agency in New York. And she said, well, it's not going to fall through. They've told me I have this position, but they just won't return my calls. And I said, so what's your alternative here? Are you putting all your eggs in one basket? She said, well, maybe I am. I said, so let's see who's their, do you know who their competition is? Oh, yes, I know who their competition is. I said, so your assignment, should you choose to accept it, is to go and look at those competitors and send in an application. What can it hurt? And the outcome, of course, as you know, is, she got the job with the competitor in a much bigger and better role than she ever thought she would. But if you don't think that way, mm-hmm. you miss all kinds of opportunities. So determining what you'll do.
Joe, I know that you're the great preparer. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen you go into something that you weren't prepared for. And so can you speak a little bit to that?
Well, I was thinking back to a story here. You're talking about Vatna before and what your fallback position is. Going back about a decade, our major competitor was in trouble and tried to merge with us several times. And we got into these conversations, and it was very tempting to say, you know, let's roll these things together. But we had this fallback position, which was let them go into bankruptcy and then buy the assets out of bankruptcy, because there really was no competition to buy the company. We just let it roll forward, and we had this backup position, and the backup position in the final analysis turned out to be better than the original position. So we wound up getting the assets out of bankruptcy without going through all the issues of consolidating balance sheets and inventories mm-hmm. and so on.
Yeah, and that's good business, and really strong when executives say, all right, I'm going to push you, young salesperson here. Mm-hmm. What will we do if this fails? And if they don't have good answers, the backup needs to be, okay, go find out.
Yeah. Create, find something.
Make
sure that
even,
you know it.
Even if it may not be a good alternative, but you've always got an alternative.
Mm-hmm. And it's your confidence going in.
Yes, that's right.
It absolutely is.
I've had a couple of inquiries that some of you are having trouble seeing the slides. All the slides will be posted on our website, along with the recording of the conference call, which will be up tomorrow. And just to be safe, after the call, I'll email everybody a set of the slides in case you've had trouble seeing them.
So I'd like to go back, Joe, and have you share a little information. I know that you had a very different way of negotiating with, building relationships with, working with your vendors. So talk to us a little bit about that.
In retailing, most of what you're buying is merchandise. So merchandise vendors are the key to what we were doing. And we had a philosophy about how we dealt with them. First of all, we took a long-term view. It was not about this individual transaction. It was about a years and years worth of business relations together. To begin with, we have an annual vendor conference where the vendors come in, the top couple of leaders in the company, and they'll stay with us for 2 or 3 days, and we'll talk about, we will share with them and keep no secrets, for the most part, about our business strategy and our beliefs and our values, and we just talk about what we're all about. I remember used to tell the group, and I know this is still done today, make us a test kitchen for your new products. Well, that we win and the supplier wins there because we're willing to test their products and we want to work with them on the development of it. Therefore, when they get a new product, they're probably going to get to market before the competitor, and we'll be the first retailer to have that product. We went through with our suppliers all the factors that go into making the relationship successful. It's new products. How about the instructions to put the product together or to operate it? We went through that to make sure that the customers could understand it, because if you give customers bad instructions, they have to come back to the store, and that erodes the relationship as opposed to builds it. What's it packaged like? If you can get, 100 on a trailer instead of 80, that's going to reduce your transportation cost by 20%. Is the package appealing? Is there selling education involved, and do we need to partner on how to teach our salespeople in the store how to sell the product? What are the logistics involved? Can we when we send a truckload load of merchandise out to a store, can we then pick up goods at a factory in the same trucking lane so that we're making double use out of our equipment? How are we advertising? What's the best way to present this product in advertising? Are we getting it there in the right season? And so on and so on. And then we take it one step further. We would ask our buyers and sometimes even people like the senior executives to go visit a supplier on their turf. And it's amazing what happens when you visit them on their turf. You can always sudden see and just get into discussions that you would never have sitting in an office somewhere else, and you can figure out, well, we could do this, we could do that, or this vendor could also make another product for us. You explore all sorts of avenues that way. I remember the words I used to say at the end of this conference, and I'm probably still saying today, our objective is to move the maximum amount of your merchandise, Mr. Bender, the maximum amount of your merchandise out our front door. Mm-hmm. And we work together and look at all the factors involved. Obviously, cost is a big one, but it's not the only one. If you get all the rest of these right, you can actually take cost out of the process, and everybody wins in that situation.
Including the customer.
Yeah.
And you've just illustrated something. Folks say, well, I never negotiate in person anymore. I'm always over the telephone, or I'm in a bidding war. And I would say to you, negotiation is people business. Mm-hmm. Even at a large corporation like Tractor Supply, it has to be people business. Otherwise, you don't explore all the possibilities. Now, you may start out with a bidding process. You may start out over the telephone. But if there's a way that you can make a face-to-face contact, do it. It's just that important.
I think you're right.
It's interesting. These face-to-face relationships can make all the difference in the world in solving problems, too. When you think about Tractor Supply senior leadership meets with the senior leadership of our top 200 vendors every year, if there's a breakdown on their end in terms of production or the salespeople, or a breakdown on our end in terms of our buyers not doing what they should or a change in buyers, you have this top-to-top relationship that I've seen solve some what could have been disastrous problems for both sides of the agreement.
Exactly. And I want to go back to that story that you told and comment on the fact that not one of those things that you mentioned, packaging, instructions, education, any of that was the cost. You weren't talking dollars there. You were talking about taking care of the customers.
But many of those things will reflect cost savings.
Exactly.
If we teach our people how to sell more effectively, everybody wins.
And the cost goes down.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, and you've just brought up the two different kinds of negotiation. Integrative bargaining, which is what we're talking about here, versus purely price. And sometimes we have to do just distributive bargaining, which is all about the price. I mean, I love a good haggle with the best of them, but you don't build a great big deal by just haggling. It's impossible.
Well, and for those vendors that you're going to be coming back to again and again and again, haggling is great when you're at a bazaar and you're never going to see those people again. That's right. That's exactly right. But if it's a relationship that's going to be ongoing, then it's even more important that we take the time.
That's right.
It is time invested well. So we have some frequently asked questions. Well, I want to go back to the negotiation, the elements one more time and talk about closure for a minute,
mm-hmm.
because I know you have some tips about closing, and then we'll move to the frequently asked questions.
Yeah. When you close an agreement, you want to make sure that you get verbal commitment as well as, I think we'll do this deal.
Emotional
commitment and you want to, you know, I do, several of you in here have seen my handwriting. It's not all that good. But I take a few minutes at the end of a negotiation to just write a little note to mm-hmm. folks and say, thank you for your time today. I look forward to doing business with you, even if the deal's not signed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm creating an emotional commitment. I know Joe's big on writing notes.
Yeah.
And you're asking the other party face to face. Did you get your interests met here?
Mm-hmm.
What do you see as our future going forward here? You close that deal not only with contracts, which are important, but you close the deal emotionally as well. You get people invested in the outcome of the deal and future business.
So the next step or the next point is, okay, so we come together, we have a great relationship, we understand each other, we can't come to terms.
And I say, okay, folks don't like for me to say this, but sometimes there are just deals that don't need to be made,
mm-hmm.
aren't there? I mean, we've all had those.
Mm-hmm.
But if you maintain the relationship, you have not failed. Because what happens?
I come back.
People
we can come back again.
People will come back. And research tells us that folks will pay 14% more not to do business with you if you hack them off, that's a technical term, in the negotiation. Instead, you want to maintain that relationship because folks will come back.
Exactly.
I remember a situation we had many years ago where we had a working agreement with a certain supplier, and we put it out for bid, and we went through a long evaluation process, and we wound up selecting a different supplier, and that was unfortunate for the company of record that had been with us for several years, but then that person just shut off communication and ignored talking to us, and we were not necessarily happy with the new supplier. But because the old supplier had just walked away from
us,
shut
the door,
sort of thumbed his nose at us, when it came time to re-examine things and who we're going to consider in the next phase, they were not in a consideration because they had not maintained that relationship. So wherever you are, even if you lose a deal, maintain the relationship. There's no downside in doing it, a potential upside. In this case, it could have been very significant.
Absolutely. I want to hit on one other thing because we don't have a slide about this, but there is that whole people part.
Yes.
And there are some people that are nicer than others, and there
Indeed.
Are some people that maybe they don't know this model, or maybe they got up on the wrong side of the bed this morning, but they're just
Or they could just be a horse's rear.
Well, they could be.
Uh-huh.
And that's your word, again, another highly technical term. So what if I'm dealing with one of those people, and I'm urging you to tell a story because I remember one of your stories about a negotiation you made on behalf of the university at some point, and you got to the room and everything that could be done poorly and
yes.
meanly and ugly was done.
Well, the first piece of advice I would tell you is stop negotiating.
And that's what you did.
And you have to stop negotiating and deal with the people problem using people techniques and then come back and solve the problem on its merits. So you want me to tell the story?
Mm-hmm, I do.
So I walked into this vendor. We were getting ready to sign an agreement when I was VP for administration. And the folks said, come out to our shop. We'll show you around. I said, sure, that's nice. I got there, and they had they kept me waiting. When I went into the room, everybody had something to drink except me. They had five men on the other side of the table, and here I was, female. The light was shining in my eyes, and they said, we need to discuss the specifics of this deal. And so I decided to stop negotiating and say, may I have something to drink? You all have. So they got me something to drink. I got up and closed the blinds, and then I said, you know, I think this is not the right time to close this deal. I thought we had an agreement. So here's my card. Call me. Come out tomorrow to Belmont. And if you want to bring these fine gentlemen with you, bring them on, and we'll have another conversation. So the next day, the salesperson showed up with his manager.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And very apologetic, of course, because I was in a no-win situation
right.
there.
That was going nowhere good.
Nowhere good. So just stop negotiating and extricate yourself. Or if it's something that you have to deal with, then you use people techniques
mm-hmm.
instead of negotiation techniques. Because if you mix those two things up, here's what happens. So if I'm being really hard on Joe in a negotiation, right? And he's making faces here. And he gives in to me. What's he training me to do?
Beat me up.
Be a bully.
Beat him up all the time.
Right.
Right? Instead, stop negotiating and deal with the people problem using I statements. Our friend Doug Stone from Harvard has the best model for this that you all teach in difficult conversations. I don't know if you're aware of this.
Mm-hmm.
And then say what it is. Here's what I see. I statements. My concern is that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? And those four statements will just calm things down.
And you don't follow those, you, like, you horse institute.
No, you don't, no. But I've been known to.
If I could just get a little bit off track here for a minute, but we were talking earlier about handwritten notes, and I just want to give my general editorial. Sending people handwritten notes when anybody does anything nice is a win-win proposition for you. People respect you. It makes all the difference in the world. It's not like sending an email. And wherever you have an opportunity to send somebody a handwritten thank you note, it's something people remember, and it makes you – they look at you in a much more positive light. So not just in negotiations. Anywhere in any business dealing you're doing, get a chance to send a thank you note. Do it. And if you don't have thank you notes with your name on them, next time somebody asks you what you want for your birthday, tell them you want some hand, some name, some notes with your name, personalized
notes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's right. That's exactly right. I think you're exactly right. And that, it's such a personal touch as opposed to an email with the other 40 that are in your inbox, honestly. Okay, so a few last questions, and then we'll open it up for the questions out there. So I'm negotiating with someone who hasn't a clue about this model.
Yep.
It doesn't keep me from practicing this, right?
No.
Well,
you don't have to.
Are there special things I can do?
You can be the leader of this and lead people gently through this. So, Mary, I want to understand what you care about. Interests, right? And I'm saying, you don't mind if I make notes, do you? And I'm going to write those things down using a little P-chart. If this is what we both care about, let's see if we can come up with some ways to get these things to happen. Options. So now we've got all these possibilities. Which of these possibilities, options, do you prefer and why? That's standard. Now, you don't come in and say, so what's your BATNA? Because nobody's going to know what you're talking about. But it's not a bad practice to ask people what their alternatives are. Now, if somebody asks you that, you're going to say, I'm not going to discuss that right now. But it doesn't mean you couldn't ask them.
And it doesn't mean I couldn't figure it out if I really gave it some thought.
That's right.
I know you well enough.
That's right.
Exactly. And then we've already talked a little bit about dealing with negative, difficult people. Deal with the people stuff.
Using people techniques, and I teach four really good ways to deal with people problems, and it's, I don't know if we've got time to talk about those now or not, but
we can hit them briefly.
The first is to match the intensity. Folks think that when somebody raises their voice to you, you should lower yours. Instead, research tells us that matching the intensity, not the words, lets people know that they're being heard. So if somebody's giving you high intensity, give them high intensity back, not necessarily anger.
Right.
Okay? It lets them know they're being heard. The second one is sometimes people just need to tell you the ain't it awful story of how you've let them down. And I know particularly in retail, if somebody buys a lawnmower at Tractor Supply and they want to bring it back in, they have to tell how that product failed them, right? And if you interrupt them and say, oh, I've got this, don't worry.
I've seen it before.
It just makes them angrier, and they'll start all over. So sometimes your role is just to make I'm listening noises and let them fill up the bucket with the ain't it awful story. The third thing is active listening. And, you know, folks have written books and techniques and all that, taught courses.
Everything.
It is just absolutely the most powerful negotiation skill you can have. What it is capturing the essence of what someone is telling you and saying it back to them. It lets them know they've been heard, and they will hear their own argument. And sometimes it'll get them off the dime. If you find yourself stuck in a negotiation, actively listen to the other party, and it will move things along. And finally, take people back to options. Well, if this doesn't work for you, what does? And by giving you those options, some options, you can get the negotiation back on track. So when things are spiraling out of control with the people side, use those people techniques and see if that'll help you. If that won't help you, stop negotiating, take a time out, and come back another day.
And a lot of times that's required when we get very emotional,
yes,
or
right,
or somehow or other we just, you can feel when somebody needs to take a break.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Well, why don't we open it up for questions. Callers, *7 to ask a question. Online, enter your question in the box and hit send. And we are waiting.
Well, I have a, if there's not a question there, I have a question. I'm negotiating with my wife over where we should go for dinner tonight, and I want to go for a steak dinner, and she wants to go for an Italian dinner. Do you have any suggestions on how to resolve
Let
this?
Let Dorothy decide.
Do what I'm told.
Yeah.
Yes, not doing that has gotten you into trouble before.
So that's not a negotiation.
No, it's not actually. And if you can decide that you both want to go out to dinner, then maybe you can trade off. We'll go your place tonight and somewhere else tomorrow night. I mean, that's certainly a good way to think about it.
Everybody's happy.
Well, in that case, we'll do what she wants tonight.
Yeah. So one of the questions that I get a lot, and it is that, well, you just don't know my system. You don't understand how tough it would be to try this method. We are hard charging, all about the money kind of a thing. And to those folks I say, try this once.
Mm-hmm.
Try if someone comes in and says, this is all about the money, let's just deal with the money, try whoa. It's only a deal that you're going to agree to. Let's just take a little time and explore how we might make this a bigger agreement for both of us. I mean, what have we got to lose?
Right.
Nothing. We can talk about the money, but let's think about it. Things such as timing are important. For example, in one of my largest customers, timing of equipment to their hospitals is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll trade dollars for timing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They'll pay more to get things more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
if there are quality issues, you can trade on quality as well.
Mm-hmm.
So exploring the possibilities is sort of what I encourage folks to do.
Right. And I know you've got a wonderful story of how you helped a vendor at one point because they needed storage space,
yeah,
and you took it ahead of time, which was no skin off your nose because it was at a time when you didn't have a high inventory and were able to help them.
Instead of a supplier having to buy warehouse space to warehouse, I think they were lawn and garden products, and we had nearly empty, or had a lot of space in our warehouse, we said, well, you know, ship it to us 90 days earlier, we'll hold it for you, and then we'll take it in inventory when we're supposed to, and you won't have to pay the shipping, you won't have to pay your storage cost, which will reduce our cost, and everybody wins.
So tell me then, because that wasn't really a negotiation, that was just an offer that you made, how do you think they're going to look on you when it comes time to negotiate again?
They look on us very positively. As a matter of fact, I know at one point, one supplier who we had worked with that way, it was a big year for snow, and there were not enough snow blowers to go around, and I know we got preferential shipment,
mm-hmm,
on snow blowers at the peak of the season. As you might imagine, for those of you who are not familiar, the snow blowers sell only when it snows. And when it snows, you got to have the snow blowers where the snow is.
So true. Okay, we have a couple of questions. In the model, interest options, standard, BATNA, and closure, can you explain standard again?
Yes.
Maybe give us an example.
Sure. So if I were negotiating an agreement about snowblowers, okay, let's take that as an example. If I'm a good negotiator, I not only research all the data about snowblowers that's out there for the company that I'm going to purchase them from. I also look at who are the competitors in that marketplace, what are they charging, how's their delivery schedule, what are all the facts and figures. A good negotiator researches the standards for their own side. A great negotiator researches standards that the other side's going to use as well. Traditionally, the kinds of standards that we see are what's the law around this deal, what are the workplace standards that we have to maintain, particularly I do a lot of business with hospitals. Quality standards are mm-hmm. huge in their negotiations, mm-hmm. and so they are constantly looking at what are the quality standards and how do we negotiate around that. In IT, you've got seed speeds, you've got all kinds of technology things as well. So making sure that you understand the facts and figures before you go in, mm-hmm. and then if you get surprised by something. You know, in God we trust, all others bring data. And so you really want your data when you negotiate. Otherwise, your negotiating partner can say, oh, well, no, Mary, that data's wrong. Mm-hmm. And you can say, help me understand where it's wrong. Here's where I got my data. What data are you looking at?
Right.
And sometimes it's a battle of the standards. But if neither party has done the research and it's just hunch, mm-hmm. then you're in trouble.
Then you're in trouble. That's mm-hmm. right. So, again, it's the confidence that it gives you.
Exactly.
In
exactly.
the homework. And I would also say that if a little closer to home, I'm buying a house, then some standards would be
comps in the neighborhood, what's happening in the marketplace, what are the interest rates now versus 6 months ago.
How old is the house, what's been done to it,
what are the improvements, et cetera.
Right.
So you're constantly looking at what are the facts and figures that underlie my belief in whatever outcome this should have.
Great. We have a caller online. Hello?
Sorry, I got to hit the mute button too.
There you go. Okay.
I really liked the example that was given concerning warehousing of lawn equipment, because that's an example of not contract negotiation but vendor partnering.
Mm-hmm.
I work for a very large corporation, and we do negotiate contracts, but the focus seems to be on that particular engagement, not on the vendor relationship. And my experience in the short time that I've been here is that vendor relationships are quite tough. When you're at the C level, as the gentleman was speaking, you're able to make those type of vendor relationship overtures. Give some examples for those of us in the trenches how we can help that situation.
Well, if you were to observe what, go back to what I was talking about with the lawn and garden product, if you were the buyer and you had those facts, just push them up the ladder. I think on both sides, everybody would want to hear from you. I think that anybody at a higher level would be very receptive to anything that can improve either the relationship or the flow of the operation.
And
I think
particularly,
that you, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and particularly something that has no downside for you.
Yeah.
There's no cost associated with it for you. So,
well, many large organizations have GPOs, and they are out there just hitting the numbers hard. And I believe there's some opportunity there for those folks at the entity level to establish those relationships and inform the GPOs of those relationships. It's a very tricky kind of a thing, but you can enhance the GPO relationship,
which is a purchasing organization.
Which is a purchasing organization, right.
Because they don't know.
That's right.
It's just numbers. It is just numbers to them. They're not using it. They're not, as you like to say, they're not closest to the job.
Numbers are the yardstick, but there are all these other factors that go into it. You got production, you got transportation, you got all these other factors that get into it, which often can change the numbers by reducing the costs, by making things more efficient, and you get there by having discussions, mm-hmm. by talking with people.
So I would say one of the things you might want to do is take on the assignment of trying to help educate the GPO, and particularly those people that you work most closely with.
Right. I think of one example where a hospital received a shipment of current needles that were rusted. They were still in the packages, still current on the timestamp. And the person who had to negotiate that was at the hospital level. Not that they had to go back to the GPO, but they had had such bad relationships that it was hard to remedy that and hard to make that right without threat of lawsuits and this,
well,
that,
it's
and
a
other.
Customer service disaster.
Nightmare. Yes.
It's
well,
a
you know that having
nightmare.
More.
I lived that example myself. That
oh, did
very
you?
Example, not rusted, but not sharp.
Oh.
And that was a customer service nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody wins in that case.
That's right.
A scalpel that was not sharp.
A scalpel that was not sharp. No, I don't think I've seen that, nor do I want to.
Okay.
We have a couple of other questions. Do you agree with Stephen Covey's win-win relationship philosophy in his book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People? If so, how does win-win fit into the context of negotiation? Thank you for presenting this helpful information.
Oh, how nice. Well, yes. Stephen Covey got it right on a lot of things. The idea of mutuality in negotiations is what I'm talking about there. It has to be an okay agreement for you,
mm-hmm.
or we don't do the deal.
Well, and his highest level was win-win or no deal.
Or no
and
deal.
And he
That's
also
right.
espoused the idea of sometimes you just walk away from it
right.
and come back another day.
That's right. And the notion that you envision a good deal, his idea of beginning with the end in mind, thinking about what a great deal would be for your organization mm-hmm. and going for it. And that's, I love that idea.
Mm-hmm. I'm a Covey person myself.
Yes.
So.
I can tell.
What's the best way to sell customers that are price-driven? So I'm selling now, and they're price-driven. I get. I'm assuming as opposed to value-driven.
You're going to have to make the value proposition, and this is all preparation. If you just compete on price, you become a commodity, and that's a recipe for going out of business because there will always be somebody who can underprice you.
Well,
always,
will.
And who will try to.
Mm-hmm.
And they may not be able to deliver, but they'll underprice you. So all the sales literature is exactly right. Figure out what the value proposition is, back it up with numbers, illustrate it six ways from Sunday, and negotiate around the value versus just the number.
Just the number. Other questions? Star 7 or online? Enter your question and hit
Well, it's 10 minutes to the hour. We have one more in there? No more. Okay. Well, let's wind it up here. I want to say a big thank you to Susan Williams for being with us. I also want to point out that November 20th, we'll be doing a full-day class on the negotiations, and as I said earlier, it is probably the most remembered class from the 18 days that our people spend together at the Signature Leadership Program.
And I get to deliver it.
That's right.
That's right. It will be on our website.
This will be tomorrow.
Tomorrow. So if you're looking for more information about it, go to our website, scarletleadership.com.
In addition, you can rehear this conference call beginning tomorrow on this website. And we also would be very interested to know what you'd like us to talk about in the future. So we're mapping out a plan for next year, and just give us your thoughts and give us your ideas. We'd love to know what they are, and our whole objective here is to share with you business knowledge that can help you be a better business executive, a better business leader.
Right. So our next call will be November 7th, and we'll be announcing the topic of that call. And the slide that you're seeing is talking about our call on December 12th when we'll have Kim Vance from Baker Donaldson with us talking about legal issues. So that will be a lively discussion.
I didn't know we were going to have that, but let me just make a comment on that. That may sound like a dull topic to you all, But I want to tell you, Kim Vance is one of the most interesting and energetic instructors that we've had. And when she talks about employee relations, I mean, she's going to give you a different perspective than you might hear elsewhere, and a very good one. And she also very entertaining, has a great sense of humor. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Yes, we all are.
We'll see you all on Thursday, November 7th. And again, thanks so much to our long-term friend and partner, Susan Williams.
My pleasure.